WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now, and it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to another episode of Monday Night Talk. Yes, my name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be... on this microphone until 8 o'clock, unless Larry shuts me down. But we have a fantastic show lined up for you. At least I'm hoping it will be a fantastic show. We'll start things off after we check in with Renee Hamilton. Find out what's happening out on the roadways one last time this evening, coming up in a couple of moments. We'll speak with State Senator Mike Brady. He is scheduled to call in, and we'll kind of get caught up with him in regards to how the Senate is handling some of their amendments, how they're doing with the budget before it gets passed on to the conference committee, and we find out what happens for the fiscal 2018 budget. And then we'll move on to Steve Burns. Steve Burns, WMAL newsman, and also, I like to call Monday Night Talks, he is Monday Night Talks DC correspondent. We're going to catch up with him as to what's going on. I'd like to get an idea what's happening down in the nation's capital, especially with all that's going on with the 45th president. And then at 7 o'clock, now, Mr. Burns' conversation will kind of be, I want to say, a lead-in to our conversation at 7 o'clock. I'm hoping to talk with Steve about, you know, what's going on with the president. What's going on with the latest in regards to the firing of James Comey, the FBI director, former FBI director. It's almost like a red versus blue scenario, but it's not. It's not. I've retired that name for obvious reasons. I do have one of those individuals who was part of that segment. He will be here at 7 o'clock. Mr. Craig Pina, who is a Republican operative. And he is also a candidate for state representative. He, of course, will be in the red corner. And in the blue corner, I got a young lady who has... She's got a bunch of titles, but I'm just going to read off two of them here. Kerry Rodriguez Lorenzo. She is actually the executive director of Mass Parenting Action. And also with the Massachusetts, the state Democratic Committee. She's an at-large member. There's another one here. I think I was reading it off earlier on the national level. She's with the National Democratic Committee. So we'll be letting those two discuss and kind of give us a feel as to their thoughts on what's going on with President Trump, his actions, where things stand at this particular time. So that's coming up. And then Hank Philippi Bryant, best-selling author, award-winning investigative reporter. She will be on this program, as will be Mark Rush, in just a few moments.
Listen, on Memorial Day, go to all the spaces used to remember our fallen soldiers. Adorn them with flowers and flags. Remember the sacrifices our young American men and women made for our stars and stripes. When you drive by the wicked cool memorials like the tank down in New Bedford, reflect. That tank could have been from some other country with some other flag on it. Think about that this Memorial Day. Then do something for some veterans organization or another. Recently, Brennan Smoke Shop's customers donated enough spare change and bought a horse for Three Hearts Farm down on Beaver Dam Road in Plymouth, Benny, Bud, Dude. Happy summer from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Brennan's Smoke Shop, now open on Pope's Island, New Bedford.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
And we return here to Monday Night Talk. I'm going to throw out an email address because we will solicit for your questions when we are doing our segment at 7 o'clock. Maybe something that we can ask the two individuals who will chat with us. It is Monday Night Talk at gmail.com. Monday Night Talk at gmail.com. Send along an email. Again, we're going to talk a little bit about President Donald Trump, some of the latest things that have happened. I welcome into the room, as he appears from time to time, as my co-host, Mr. Mark Rushto. Mr. Rushto, welcome to the program as my wingman.
Thank you for having me once again. Appreciate it. How are you tonight?
We're doing excellent. We're doing excellent. And I'm sure you're looking forward to the conversation.
Very much so. Got a great lineup tonight with the State Senator Mike Brady and all those listed.
Yeah, I just sent him a text message. I'm hoping that he'll be along. Larry will probably try him in a couple of moments again if we don't hear from him. I did clear this with him on Friday to see what was going on in regards to having him on, and he was cleared for a landing. So okay. We're definitely waiting. Like I said, if we don't hear from him in a couple of moments, well, we can always turn to a state representative candidate, even though he'll be getting bonus time. He doesn't care. He actually showed up earlier than normal. It's a good thing he didn't show up at 7 o'clock, as I had mentioned. And usually it's a habit for Mr. Pina to show up early, and it might pay a dividend this evening, so probably want to take a moment to talk a little bit. Our closing guest for this evening, Hank Phillippe Ryan.
One of my all-time favorites.
Why that?
Well, growing up, when I came to the point of looking into a career, I actually went to study broadcast journalism, and investigative reporting was very intriguing to me when I was trying to scope out the field. When it was either meteorology or broadcast journalism, I don't know why. But I really was interested in investigative reporting. It seemed like it was on the edge, and really got into the nitty gritty in the corners of the seedy side of life. And Hank Phillippe Ryan was one of those then, and still is now, on the cutting edge of investigative reporting in the field.
Yeah, not only is she on the cutting edge, but she's also somebody who has written nine books. Is it nine books or is it more? Nine
that I know of. Yeah,
nine. I mentally struggle to try to write one. And she has been able to generate nine books that are best-selling. And it's part of a series and that people love.
Award-winning.
Award-winning. Excellent. Yes. Can't say enough. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. She, other than talking with her about her career, let's get a little insight into her being a part of a big event, helping to celebrate Massasoit Community College being around for 50 years.
Radio Classics Live.
Radio Classics Live.
Brought back. It was ran for 22 years.
Yeah, it was put in mothballs.
Buckley Performing Arts Center. And an annual fundraising event for scholarships for Massasoit students that delve into radio, television, and theater.
Mm-hmm.
It originated out of the TV studio and was something that actually, as a student, I benefited from. I believe you yourself as a student benefited from, because look at you now. And
sure.
A whole new generation.
And then we have another student. We have Kim Langford.
Is being reared up.
Radio, what did she win?
Kim
Radio
is
Student
our
of the Year.
Radio Student of the Year, yes.
Wow. You want to say hi? Hi to you folks?
Hi, everyone.
It was good. She even had the wave down. That's real good. So, well, we'll welcome Kim, and we'll look forward to promoting this over the next couple of weeks. Just so folks know, you are going to be helping me to get some of these folks who are going to be on the bill.
Yes,
for that big show.
I'm excited, and as the opener, shall we say, this week as you already mentioned, we have Hank Phillippe Ryan. Hopefully next week, looking to land Mr. John Davidson.
Oh my God, that's incredible. Oh, sorry.
That's redundant. And the week before,
nobody got
hopefully
that.
Hopefully,
anybody under 40 did not get that.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Hopefully,
it predated them.
Hopefully, the last week before the show, we'll have Mr. John Astin.
Ooh.
From
the Adams family.
Gotta lay it out there.
Right? Yeah. And he also a lot of different. He did the game show network. He did the circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, if anybody watches like Buzzer TV or the Game Show Network, you'll see him on a lot of the older game shows.
Hollywood Squares-ish kind of?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was now Paul Lynn, but he's, you know, he still made the rounds. The other day, I was actually watching Tattletales with his significant other.
Yeah. That's going back.
Yeah, some gal named Patty. So we'll leave it there. Our guest joining us this first segment is a state senator for the 2nd Plymouth Bristol District. We have Senator Mike Brady. Senator, how are you? Is he there? Senator, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. Where are you?
I'm at the Cape Cod Cafe in Brockton. They have a big celebration. We had some citations for them. It would have been the 100th birthday of the original founder of the Cape Cod Cafe, Jimmy Papa Jamoulis. He would have been 100 years old today. So we had some citations from the House and the Senate and from the local mayor as well. And they've done a great job creating the so-called Barum pizza, the Greek-style pizza. And they've expanded. They're in Halifax now, as you know. They're in Bridgewater. They're in Rainham and Easton. And they also have a frozen pizza that is unbelievable if you cook it the way they tell you to do, right on the grill, which most frozen pizzas aren't that good, you know, but so the place is packed down here. We read the citations.
Okay. I thought for a minute that you were doing an infomercial. I wasn't sure. Coming to a town near you, unless you stop by your local grocery store or supermarket. Well, we wanted to have a couple of moments to chat with you, Senator, to kind of get caught up as to where things stand. I know that you actually have taken up a new position as the chair of revenue, working along with your House colleague, Chairman Kaufman. How is that committee working for you?
Well, it's going well. We're having a lot of hearings. The tough part, as we all know, is the private sector is doing very, very well. Property values have gone up. Unemployment is the lowest it's ever been, which is great news, but there is not enough revenue coming into the Commonwealth, which is important because we have to give money and revenue back to our cities and towns across the Commonwealth. So we're looking to be creative to try to get more revenue back to our cities and towns. And the Airbnbs is one item we're looking at. We're also looking at the internet because the internet sales, they don't pay the same taxes or if any as your local businesses do. So the playing field is not even. Mm. And we're trying to help out the small businesses by charging some companies that are located outside of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Now, Amazon did move into Massachusetts. They're paying their fair share of taxes, but a lot of these other companies that sell things over the internet are not paying their fair share. So we're looking at trying to get some revenue from that. And also the fantasy sports and the DraftKings, which is what a lot of the young people do now, betting over the internet, they're not paying their fair share. We're trying to find revenue from that as well. And then later on down the road with the gaming legislation, with the slot parlor and the gambling facilities. There was two that is opening up so far, one up in the North Shore and one in the western part of the state in Springfield. But that revenue is not going to come in until a ways down the road.
How is Plain Ridge doing these days?
They're doing fantastic, and their numbers are up, and they're advertising all over the state, so I've heard nothing but good things about their facility. So that is a way to get some more revenue into the state. They're the only slot parlor in the Commonwealth.
Any thought as to, with the passing of recreational marijuana, that to take a look at, I'm sorry, Mark's getting mad at me because I pulled the question out of his head, but any thought of finding a way to increase the numbers that were in the law that was passed up from whatever the sales tax and the tax would be, and I think like it was like 3%.
Yeah, we have a committee looking into how that is going to be taxed, and you know, we did have concerns. We sent a group of legislators out to Colorado to see what was working out there, what was not working. Even though you have to be 21 to purchase it in the Commonwealth, there is concerns about you know, getting into the hands of younger people. For instance, they are marketing gummy bears and Pop-Tarts and other edibles that are a concern. And we're trying to make sure that the young people are protected. But that being said, we still have to abide by the wishes of the voters. The voters did vote for it. So we are trying to make sure that it's taxed on an even keel. You can't tax it too much because it won't stop the illegal market. And that's another concern because in Colorado, you know, they still have an illegal market with marijuana. So that being said, we, you know, the way the ballot question was written, a husband and wife are allowed to grow so many plants in the household, but we have to have a better control over it than what they did in Colorado to make sure it doesn't get in the hands of the young people as much as it does in Colorado. Also, there is money in the legislation to also help with other substance abuse and addiction. So we're trying to make sure that we help people because the heroin epidemic is a very severe epidemic going all over the country, never mind Massachusetts. We've passed legislation over the past couple of years to address it, but we still have to do more. There's still too many young people that are dying. And the fentanyl, we've increased the penalties on them, mixing the fentanyl with the heroin, but there's just too many lives lost, and it has had a major negative impact on society.
What's the activity in the Senate the past couple of days? Are you guys working on amendments, any bills? Was it just basically tackling the numbers for the budget?
Yeah, well, the House passed their version of the budget a couple weeks ago. The Senate's going to be dealing with the budget this week. We had a caucus today to go over different things which we're going to do with the budget. There is many, many amendments filed to the budget. It happens every year. Some of them will get passed, some will not. We still have to balance the books. Unlike the federal government, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, like homeowners out there, cannot deficit spend. We have to balance the books. And we're trying to find means and ways to get revenue back to the communities all over the Commonwealth. You know, our school systems need funding. They wouldn't survive without funding from the state. Police, fire, public safety personnel, they need funding. Our roads are in deplorable condition. So we're trying to deliver the proper funding to each city and town across the Commonwealth. But that being said, it's a very tight budget, and there's not a lot of room for spending out there. So that's why some of those things I mentioned, they're looking to be creative to find other ways of revenue to bring into the Commonwealth.
What is the local aid situation when it comes to education in your district?
Well, we've increased it. It was increased a little bit in the House from what the governor's proposal was, and we're looking to increase it on the Senate side. But some communities are really getting hit very severely. I know Brockton, for instance, had to send out the pink slips to teachers, and there was over 100-something pink slips sent out. Now, every year, based on their contact, they have to send them out just to get prepared, whether they lay off teachers or not, just so the employees can get prepared. Hopefully, with the funding from the state, we can bring those teachers back. But this year is one of the worst ones we're facing again because there's not enough revenue coming in. Health insurance costs are a big factor there, too, with the state. And this is a concern that we have on the federal government side because, you know, there's a lot of different information we get out of the White House, and there's a lot of concern from residents all across the Commonwealth. If we don't get the federal dollars into Massachusetts, we're going to have to pick up the slack. And the health insurance part of the budget takes up a good portion of our budget in the Commonwealth.
Where do things stand with the state stabilization fund, the rainy day fund? Is that still growing, or is that going to be tapped into?
Yeah, it is still growing, and that was one thing that former leaders before I got in there were smart to put it in there. We have used some revenue from that in the past. We're not looking to touch the stabilization part of the budget this year. They are looking to increase that, and that's one of the things that have helped our bond rating in Massachusetts. We've got one of the best bond ratings in the country. But at times, if it comes down to it, we have had to dip into the stabilization part of the budget in the past, the funding for that. And when I first got into the state house as a representative several years ago, before I became a senator, we did use some of that funding from the stabilization fund to give
back to the cities and towns.
Well, let's also take a moment before we let you go to recognize that you're also the vice chair of the Telecommunications, Utilities, and Energy Commission. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, we've been having meetings all over the Commonwealth for that, visiting different communities. We were down in Woods Hole at one point, looking at what we can do for the environment down there. Also, we're looking at renewable energies, like solar is a big thing we're pushing for. And we have, at one point, there was a brownfield site in Brockton, which was the first brownfield site in the Commonwealth to turn it into a brightfield site. We cleaned up a hazardous site that was owned by the gas company years ago, and it produces electricity for a lot of the city buildings. So we're looking to expand upon that and lift the solar cap, net metering, because to help residents out. So homeowners, you know, they have their solar panels on the roof, but that cap is limited, and we're trying to expand upon that to help get more companies into Massachusetts. I have a company now I'm looking at that's looking to go into Massachusetts that would bring $4 million of revenue, and that's something that'll help offset the deficit and bring revenue into the Commonwealth. And we're moving forward with good, clean energy. Wind is another thing we're looking at. And again, some communities like the windmills, some do not. We're looking to put those more out into the ocean towards the islands of Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard, not to hurt the fishing industry and not to be in the ways of pedestrians who are coming and going on vacation back and forth to the islands, but it'll help produce revenue and energy for the state. And it's a way to get clean energy, to get away from these fossil fuel power plants that, you know, they're going to close the Pilgrim plant. We have to replace that energy somewhere, and this is moving forward with good, clean, renewable energy.
Now, if what is your go-to pizza at Cape Cod Cafe? Is there a specialty, or are you just a cheese guy?
Well, as you've seen me recently, I got to lose some weight. I like all kinds of pizza, but I grew up with the plain cheese pizza over the years, but there aren't too many meals I miss, so I got to get out on the trail and start walking a little more and lose some weight, because it's tough. You know, usually during a campaign, we may lose 20 or 30 pounds, but then you put it right back on because there's so many meetings and functions you go to. And sometimes at night after you're done with a meeting, it's 9 or 10 at night, and the only thing left open is either pizza or a Chinese restaurant. And, you know, it's like everything in life. Moderation is a key, but it was easier for me when I was a young lad. I would burn it off as soon as I got it. But then when I hit the age of 30, it was more difficult to lose that weight. And now I'm 55, so it's even more difficult. So it's tough, but especially with the summer weather, I'd like to get out there and enjoy the good weather. It's kind of rainy tonight, but with the schedule, we're out every night. And especially this week with the budget, we'll probably be going to midnight at least three nights this week. But it's important. There's a lot of piece of legislation we have to look at. I'm looking to expand on the solar power out there, so I've got an amendment filed to the budget. So some proposals that are right now that are going to end this year, December of 2017, they're projects on the table that you don't want to lose.
Right.
We want to expand that out there for two more years so we can start continuing to bring more business and revenue to the Commonwealth. And there's another company that I don't know if I talked to you about, but it's a new roofing company that isn't like solar panels on your roof. They look like shingles. And it's amazing the energy they produce for the homeowner, and it'll save the homeowner some money. So I think things are really moving forward in the Commonwealth on efficiency, but we got to keep things moving forward.
Senator, we want to thank you very much for joining us for this segment. We'll let you go back to your celebration down there, recognizing Cape Cod Cafe and their legacy on the South Shore here, my friend.
Yeah, they're continuing to grow, and we have a lot of friends who own pizza places all over the Commonwealth. We appreciate all the restaurant owners out there who do a great job. The Jim Moses family has always given back, sponsoring football teams across the area. They have a Cape Cod Bowl that the Bridgewater-Rainham team plays against Brockton High. Unfortunately, they have won more times than not down in Bridgewater-Rainham. So,
truth.
But it's a fun bowl. It's right on Thanksgiving Day, and they sponsor the whole thing.
Well, we're going to let you go, Senator, but we're going to look forward to having you back on in a couple of weeks, if it's okay.
Thank you, and as we spoke about, I'm happy to have you come and visit us in the State House, and we can do a show right from my office if you'd like.
Sounds like a plan. We're going to book it today.
Thank you very much, and I wish everyone a happy Memorial Day, and hopefully the weather will be good on Monday, Memorial Day.
There he is, State Senator Mike Brady, representing the 2nd Plymouth and Bristol District. We are going to cruise into break. When we come back, we're going to speak with the one and only Steve Burns. Don't go anywhere.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This is your operator speaking.
Oh, good. Yeah, can I have 1-888-64-TINYs?
Sir, you want the operator to connect you to 1-888-64-TINYs?
Oh, yeah, I got a broken windshield.
Sir, the phone company cannot be concerned with your broken windshield. Our concern is, how did you access my number? When you press the operator button, you should hear an annoying dial tone.
Well, yeah, I got a rotary dial phone here from 1970 or so. Are you going to connect me to Tiny?
I guess not.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Joining us on the phone line, gentleman who was on our airwaves for, was it a year, Mr. Burns?
Oh, it was more like 3 years, I think.
Oh, okay. Time flies when you're having fun. Because I thought you've only been gone for 6 months, personally, so...
Yeah.
It is what it is, but you can check him out, actually. He's got a new website, steveburnsnews.com. Pretty nifty website. Did you do that yourself, or did you...
Thank you for the plug. I appreciate it. Yeah, I did do that myself. I mean, they have templates and everything set up, but thank you, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. Larry and I were actually looking at it, and I believe there's one particular one that... That made Larry and I both hungry. Larry, if you will.
Bub and Pops, can I help you?
Arlene Wagner's getting used to this.
No, I'm sorry. You have the wrong number. Were you trying to reach the White House?
Her shop's been getting 40 or 50 calls a day.
We serve soup, salad, sandwiches.
Number's just one digit off. Someone apparently tweeted the wrong number.
Some people hang up right away.
But others are just looking for someone to talk to, and she's happy to be that person.
Most people, if they're really upset, just want somebody to listen.
Are you telling these people, if they're ever in D.C., they have a place to get lunch?
Oh, absolutely. I tell them to check our Yelp reviews.
She can't ignore the calls.
It could be somebody wanting a Pop's beef brisket.
In DuPont Circle, Steve Burns on WMAL and WMAL.com.
I could go for a sandwich right now.
I can tell you firsthand that Pop's beef brisket is very tasty.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I am due a visit to come back down your way.
Absolutely.
Although I'm still, my feelings are still smarting after your Oakland A's basically took 3 out of 4 over the weekend.
Yeah, that was a pretty nice series, wasn't it?
Listen, anything that's going to help your team feel good about themselves, at least for a game or two,
yes,
I'm all for.
We're leading the AL in home runs right now, believe it or not. It'd be nice if that translated to pitching.
Yeah, if only. If only, because that was kind of their staple a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
They had pitching. But that's not why we have you on. We actually have you on, as I fondly like to call you, on Monday Night Talks, D.C. correspondent, and also a gentleman who works very hard at WMAL. And he gives us an opportunity to kind of, you know, through you, get an idea as to what's happening out on the streets of D.C., especially when it comes to our 45th president. How are things going down in the nation's capital?
I can probably best tell you through a headline that I saw in the Washington Post yesterday in an opinion column by one of their conservative opinion writers, I should say. This right now feels like Watergate on amphetamine. It's just headline after headline. At a certain point, you just start to feel fatigued. There's just more coming out every hour. On different controversies, different revelations. So there's no shortage of work to do here these days.
But how do you decipher between what's real news and what is fake news?
I like to just trust the places I know do a good job. Obviously, the Washington Post is one of those. The New York Times is another one of those. Anytime you see a story pop up on your Facebook feed, and you look at what the website is, you don't recognize it, things just seem a little off, I would Google around and see if you can verify the facts that you're seeing from another more reputable source.
And just so you know, a gentleman who's going to be joining us at 7 o'clock, Craig Pina is here. He's going to be one of the two folks. We're going to talk extensively, get their thoughts politically as to, you know, how do they feel things are going for Donald Trump as president, and where the country's going, and, you know, are we going to be immersed in scandal, or are we going to find some daylight on the other side? I also have my co-host, Mark Rocheteau, who may want to chime in and ask a question. Anything you want to ask Mr. Rocheteau?
Most definitely. Steve, what's the mood since the firing of FBI Director James Comey?
That sort of seemed like a watershed moment down here. Back before that happened, everyone said, well, no matter what Trump does, he's not going to be crazy enough to fire James Comey. And then he fired James Comey. And once all the revelations after that started coming out about supposedly Comey's memos saying that Trump had asked him to put the Russia investigation behind him and declare innocence, I mean, that to a lot of legal observers just seemed like the definition of obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to keep in mind here that we're not working on the legal definition of things. We're working on Congress's definition of things, because that's the ultimate body that would someday, if they decide to do it, decide to go with impeachment proceedings. So those are two very different things between the legal definition versus the impeachment definition, if you will.
But that isn't being whispered at this particular time, is it?
Whispered, maybe. It's not being outright talked about, but whispered, possibly. There was a report from CNN, I believe Friday night, Saturday morning, that said White House lawyers are beginning to research different legal proceedings in terms of the impeachment process. That's not to say it's right around the corner. I think they just rather would be safe than sorry. But the whispers, very faintly, are there, I think.
And what was it? Was it true that there was some recommendations to the president himself to get personal representation?
That I can't verify. I'm not entirely sure. But the lawyers, the White House lawyers in general, have been starting to look at the legal proceedings of impeachment.
But is there anything positive that's been said in regards to how the president has been doing since he has surpassed his 100th day in office?
Any positive, like, what kind of positive?
Anything positive. I mean, has there been anything that you've heard of, not only as a journalist, but as, you know, a citizen of D.C., that you hear something that's more so upbeat than kind of glum, that, you know, the president's being, his campaign is being investigated, ties to Russia. Every time we turn around, there's something different, that it's things are getting darker and darker for this president, and he hasn't even been in office for 1 year.
Well, the one big accomplishment that pretty much anyone across the conservative spectrum can point to is getting Judge Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court.
Right.
That obviously was a big reason why a lot of people voted for him. I've heard from a ton of people that his politics aside, his personality aside, I needed to vote for a Republican so we could get another Republican on the Supreme Court. But on a lighter note, there was an article over the weekend that said Trump's presidency has been great for the porta potty industry due to all the protests that have since formulated on the National Mall. Each protest is required to have one porta potty per 300 protesters, and they interviewed one porta potty provider near the district here that his profits are running 50% higher than they were last year.
Well, you know, you're somebody who works at a talk station. How has the ongoings of President Trump resonated for conversation on your station and for ratings?
It's been pretty interesting, actually. There are a lot of being around Washington, D.C., obviously, there may be a lot more what you might call establishment Republicans around here that have worked for the government for decades. They're not necessarily sort of the conservative trailblazers that are getting into politics for the first time. They've been around politics for a while. So if you're hosting a talk show here, you don't want to alienate too many of the conservative spectrum, too many parts of that conservative spectrum. So you kind of have to walk a fine line here where you're not necessarily outright skeptical of the president, but you still want to keep everyone in mind in terms of not turning off all of the more established Republican type of people here that, that have been in and around government for a very long time.
You know, let Craig Pina, who's here and going to be part of the conversation coming up at 7 o'clock, anything that I haven't asked Steve in regards to the president and some of the things that his station has covered or that's going on in D.C. that you may want to ask, being somebody who is a supporter of the president, or at least you voted for him.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah. And a couple of things that I hear when I hear people from inside the Beltway talk about the president, they don't really reflect what's really going on in the country. This is we expected this to happen, the witch hunts, the daily witch hunts, with none of them have any substance. And but he's accomplishing everything that he set out to do. Why are people so upset that he's doing what he said he was going to do? It's very refreshing for a politician to do that. We didn't have this kind of venom for Obama. We didn't have this kind of venom for either George Bush or Bill Clinton. But there's venom out there for Donald Trump because he's not part of either establishment, the Democrat or Republican establishment. He's the most populist president that I've seen in my lifetime.
So the question to Steve would be.
Oh, geez, I don't know. The question is, how do you differentiate the lens that the Beltway sees things to compared to the rest of the country?
Yeah, that is a really good question, and I think a lot of reporters that I've been working with have made a more concerted effort to actually get outside the Beltway and get into what was derisively called flyover country until this past election. And I've seen a lot of interviews with Trump supporters that the vast majority of them have said, this, like you just said, this is all a witch hunt, and it's not going to get them to change their vote or their support for him at this point. I mean, I think it's easy to look at all the revelations that come out every day and see it all as one giant movement against Trump, but a lot of these are not necessarily as groundbreaking as some of the other ones.
Now, can you actually compare any of these revelations? None of them, all totaled, don't even compare to a secret server deleting 30,000 emails or selling uranium to the Russians. How do they even compare to that?
I would say that...
Remember, he's a newsman. He's not an opinionist.
Yeah.
He's not a columnist.
I mean, if you want to discuss sharing information and the ways it shouldn't be done, I mean, then a lot of Democrats here would point to what was just discussed last week in terms of the president revealing classified information to Russians in a what they would see as an inappropriate fashion.
Definitely very interesting. Did you think when you were hired by WMAL that life would be this fun for you?
I always planned on telling people, yeah, I worked in Washington that year Donald Trump ran for president. Remember that?
Mm.
And that has now turned into, I'm working in Washington during that term that Donald Trump is president.
Folks, if you get a chance, steveburnsnews.com. He even gives the reason why he didn't want to use his good looks for television, but more so, he wanted to connect directly to your ears with his microphone. No, don't laugh. That's what it says, right, Steve?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to make sure people knew that, I mean, nothing against my friends in TV, but I'm all for radio. I don't feel like putting on makeup every day and figuring out my lighting and figuring out my camera angles. I'm sure I've told you this in the past. I just think radio is the most intimate journalism connection that you can get. It's a timeless medium. It's a valuable medium, and hopefully it's not going anywhere.
And we want to also congratulate you. I believe that you have been a part of two newscasts that have earned your station Murrow's.
Yes, that's correct. We're not the most robust news operation here in D.C. We don't have the largest newsroom, but we won a couple of Murrows the past 2 years. Those are our first ones in over a decade, so it's pretty cool.
I have to say, I have visited MAL. I think it's okay. It's pretty cool, but, you know.
Thank you.
Steve wants to diminish it a little bit. Well, he works there. That's totally up to him. Steve, I want to thank you so much for joining us and helping us kind of jumpstart our conversation coming up after the top of the hour. Anything you want to say in closing, my friend?
No, it's just been a pleasure to join you again. I hope all my friends up there at WATD are doing pretty well.
They are. They're thriving. And we are looking forward to the next time we can have you on for more news as the D.C. correspondent here to Monday Night Talk.
And you're always welcome back down here, Mr. T.
Yeah, I do want to I want to take in an Orioles game.
Yeah, the Camden Yards is definitely a sight to see.
Yeah, Fenway South. I want to get an up-close look of that. What are they calling it? A rivalry now between the Sox and the Orioles?
Oh, yeah, with the whole Dustin Pedroia, Manny Machado thing going on.
Yeah.
That's new.
So many, how many more home runs Machado can hit off of the Red Sox? There he is. Steve Burns joining us from WMAL, and he'll be back on in no time soon. We're going to step aside. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, hour number two. Featuring, we have Mr. Craig Pina is in the room. Craig, is this accurate? You're on the Republican City Committee in the city of Brockton?
For the time being, yes.
For the time being, why? Are you defecting to...
No. The new leadership has taken over, and it's time for me to step aside.
Can you divulge who the leader is?
It might be someone who's been out of town for 7 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll leave that there. But you're also a candidate for state representative?
Yes, I am.
And anything else? Anything I've overlooked? You also? Oh wait, you're on what board? What
city
board?
I'm on the planning board and the traffic commission.
Not at the same time.
Yes, at the same. Well, they don't meet at the same time. Yeah.
Okay. And joining us on the phone line, we have Kerry Rodriguez Lorenzo. Kerry, are you there?
I'm here.
How goes the battle?
Oh, I'm living the dream, brother. How are you?
We're doing good now. Kerry has a number of titles, other than also, I believe she does her own podcast. What's the name of the podcast?
Planet Mom Radio, actually. We talk about education issues and how they impact parents and talk from a parent perspective about kids.
Okay. Also the executive director of Mass Parent Action, also on the Massachusetts Democratic State Committee as an at-large member. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And now, what's this other one? There's another one here that you are on the executive committee for the Democratic National Committee, the Ethnic Council.
That's right. I am newly elected to that position as of about 2 months ago, so proud to serve on the Democratic National Committee with my colleagues.
All right. Feel free to say hello to Craig. Craig will be your counterpoint, not necessarily counterpoint all the time. We're hoping, and I'm going to. This is where I bring in my co-host, Mark Rocheteau. Kerry, Mr. Rocheteau will serve as somebody who'll ask questions as well. But before the show started, prior to this, I'm about 5 o'clock, just doing a little bit of pre-show chat with Mark and kind of giving him the rundown as to this segment that we're going to do, Mark brought up a fantastic point that I wanted him to share in regards to this segment that we're going to do, because you're both going to disagree on certain things. It's a given, right?
Sure.
Okay.
I expect that.
Okay. And would you expect that, Kerry?
Absolutely.
Okay. And that's not a bad thing. We can't. It wouldn't make for entertaining radio.
Life would be boring.
Listen,
if
we're doing kumbaya and we're holding hands here, nobody wants to listen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
People want to hear people having a constructive conversation. Mr. Rocheteau, if you would repeat the comment that you made in regards to having a forum like this.
Well, one of the concerns that I have in politics now, aside from dark money, is civility. And you kind of alluded to it earlier, Craig, as far as you made a comment about how there's so much venom in the air in regards to President Trump. And I think in just in the conversation alone, or in what should be the debate, it seems that we've lost our sense of civility. Mm-hmm. So when Kevin had talked to me about this segment, I had brought that up in regards to the overall tone I feel is in politics now. And having been raised in a school where they actually taught debate, there was a time when I remember Republicans and Democrats would have a debate, not necessarily an argument, but a debate, and they would concede points.
Now, you actually remember there was a time when a president like President number 40, Ronald Reagan, actually met weekly
with Tip O'Neill. Yeah, and that was actually one of the great examples I was raised on is the fact that those two...
Yeah, I would say, though, that the problem that we have nowadays, and I certainly appreciate the fact that, you know, we need to have civil conversations, there are weighty matters for us to deal with and contend with, but I will say that as the mother of three young men who are Latino, who worry on a regular basis because of the color of their skin and remarks that our president has made in regard to whether or not they are welcome in this country and the fact that our last name is Rodriguez and whether or not we're still allowed to live in America, it has brought our politics and the conversation to something that is much different than what it was before. And so when you start to interject that kind of rhetoric into a conversation, it becomes very difficult to be civil because these are life and death matters. There are families that are being ripped apart right now, people who don't know whether or not they're going to be able to continue to live. So it's very difficult, I think, because the issues are so poignant at this point, and it's life or death for a lot of people. So it really ratchets up the emotion. So I think that should be a part of the conversation as well, because this is not just something that we can simply, you know, consider and move on for. This is something that's going to impact my family very directly, not something I'm going to be able to kind of put aside once I've kind of made my opinion or made my comment on it.
Did you want to counter? Did you
Yeah, I think that goes towards another comment I made earlier about the media witch hunt. A lot of President Trump never said anything about sweeping every immigrant out of the country and sending them back. We had a very foolish state representative who I'm running against make claims that there were going to be ice sweeps in Brockton, and it never happened.
There and have been
what they're looking for.
Excuse
me.
Hold on.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me. I allowed you to speak.
Now hold on. If you would finish your thought, Mark, this may help with continuing the conversation. So as you were saying.
So to Craig's point and to Kerry's point,
absolutely.
Kerry, I understand what you're saying as in regards to the fact of, you know, someone or during a recent political cycle, there was certain rhetoric. And I understand that, but I think the other side is that, and I understand that the issues affect our lives. And I would say that while some of these issues that we're dealing with now are a little bit more immediate, the issues always have affected our lives.
Sure.
Because the politics are about our lives and our lifestyles. And I would say that even more so, the reason to have more civility if the issues are that much more closer and that much more of a situation. I'm an African-American male. And when you talk about situations of deportation and whatnot, I'll give you something more immediate and in regards to, you know, in interaction with police. And every interaction that I've had with a police officer, I have maintained civility for that very reason, for my own protection. Not knowing if the police officer that was coming up to me was in a good mood or a bad mood, was racist or not racist. With African-American police officers, with white police officers, civility, for me, has always been kind of my cornerstone to maintaining a situation. And I think that in regards to political conversation, we're only going to spin tires if it's not maintained. And even more so with
if it's a matter of
these situations.
We used to do a segment called Red versus Blue, and it was entertaining the first couple of times that we did it, where Craig was one of the two individuals who would be in here. The other individual, who was passionate and somebody who not only passionate about politics but about his allegiance to the party, there would be more of screaming and yelling than any actual
no substance.
No constructive conversation or criticism. And I think the thing that Mark is trying to say here is, as well, it's okay if you guys talk over each other. The only problem with that is that the folks who are listening at home will not, they will struggle to decipher what exactly it is that you guys are saying to one another. No. So if you guys want to talk over each other when we're doing this, that's okay. We'll allow it, but I'm just saying to you as a starting point, try to at least listen. Try to be concise with the points that you're making and give each other a chance to...
Can I complete my point now?
Sure. If you want to be the host of the show, help yourself, my friend. Go ahead.
I mean, when we're talking about that, we need to look at the actual facts and not the rhetoric that is being spewed by politicians and the media. We need to look at the facts. When we're looking for ICE to be involved with local law enforcement, we're talking about programs like 287G, in which local sheriffs can hold illegal immigrants if they're held for another crime. Mm. We're not having jackbooted thugs walk down the streets and break down doors and pull people out of their houses. We're going to leave people alone who are getting up to going to work every day.
Fathers are dropping their children off and arresting them during the course of that. And you think that's a civil action? You think that's civility?
Could you repeat the first part of what you just said? Because
you're
both talking.
When you have ICE agents who show up when a father is dropping their child off at school, you think that's civility?
When did this happen? What are the circumstances?
I'm not seeing a militia walk up my street right now, but a father dropping their child off at school. To you, that's an appropriate.
When did this happen? And what are the circumstances? Is he just a regular guy that gets up and goes to work every day, or did he have warrants?
Yes.
Who knows?
Yep.
I don't know. I don't know the instance you're talking about, and we don't know the circumstances, so we can't use conjecture.
I can absolutely use the example because I know exactly of the case that I'm speaking of.
Okay, please share.
Yes. Absolutely. This is what we're talking about. These are things that are actually happening to families within the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, which is inappropriate and incivil. So I'm happy to have a civil conversation, but what is happening around ICE is not civil in our society.
If I could ask real quick, the individual that you're referencing, was that individual, was he somebody who had warrants for criminal activity, and was he here legally?
No, this was a person who went to Niagara Falls was in the country and overstayed a visa, a student visa, went to Niagara Falls and crossed over the Canadian border by accident, and was told because of that they were allowed to come back into the United States, but then entered into the system via that mechanism, not because they had a DUI, not because they had a domestic violence charge or a charge of any sort, but literally had crossed the Canadian border and come back.
So he literally entered illegally.
No, he was here. He was an individual, and then came back, so he literally
entered illegally.
Was actually engaged in the process of obtaining citizenship, and then during the course of dropping off his child, who is also an American citizen, was captured and arrested by ICE and deported, and is now in the deportation process to be sent back to Mexico, to which he has no ties now.
So he left the country and literally re-entered illegally, and
was authorized by U.S. Immigration to come back, but then was forced to go through a hearing.
Okay, so he's
I think
what she's trying to say here is that this is an individual who was going through the process, and for some reason there was where he accidentally left the country, came back in, was allowed to continue with the process, but then there was a hearing, and that's where things stand right now.
Yes.
Okay.
That's where things stand right now.
The individual has been deported.
So ICE intervenes literally when he is dropping his child off at school. And you think that's an appropriate place to have an ICE intervention in front of his child?
Again, this is just your word. It's not my word.
But let's go with this.
This is something that you think is appropriate, and you expect to have
I don't. I'm not.
Dialogue, a civil conversation.
I don't know this actually happened.
And we're having tragedies like this on a regular basis. Like, it's very hard to have a civil conversation when you see families being ruined on a regular basis.
What needs to be done, Carrie? What needs to be done with the immigration? What we do with immigration right now, moving forward? What do you feel would be the right course of action that this president should take? Moving forward, that's going to be something that everybody's going to be happy with.
Well, my friend Craig just referenced Ronald Reagan and what he did with immigration reform. Perhaps we need to take a look at what Ronald Reagan did back in the 80s, take a look at who is in the country right now, provide a path to citizenship, amnesty for people who are in this country, who are not documented, who are trying to get citizenship, who are producing and wonderful members of our community. Perhaps, we should follow in Ronald Reagan's footsteps.
No one's ever had a problem with people who are getting up and going to work every day.
Deported right now with ICE.
A path to citizenship has never been argued against. We're pro immigration. We want to see immigrants come to the country.
Right now,
we want to see them come the right way. We want to see them come legally.
Who have been in ICE offices attempting to attain their citizenship on that path, who have been arrested in ICE offices doing check-ins for their immigration status.
Who
actively went in and are in the process of seeking their citizenship, have been arrested and deported in those situations.
That was actually part and parcel of the 60 Minutes report that was on last night in regards to the fact that there are taxpaying citizens, but taxpaying immigrants who are seeking citizenship, who have sought refuge in churches and are being deported. I think that there's definitely an issue with the system such that people like
it's broken. It's something needs to be done.
It's broken, but we can't use the anecdotal evidence
to be accelerated, for families to be ruined and broken apart, including families in your listening area right now. So thank goodness for your state representative standing up and giving them warning to watch their behind.
Do you know that? Just if I could just throw this out there real quick, what would be the proper course of action in regards to this situation? I get you're saying that this president, this administration, is haphazardly handling this situation. What would be the right course of action, Carrie? And then, if you will, Craig, afterwards, give your thoughts as if it's being handled haphazardly or if there could be a better way. Carrie?
People who are contributing to our communities, who are tax-paying people, who want to become American citizens, who are following the rules, who are good members of our society, should be welcomed into this country, just like our forefathers welcomed people from every place you can imagine. And I do not think that putting families in jeopardy, where they are being broken apart, where children who are American citizens, who were born here in the United States, who have to worry, cannot even concentrate in school because they are so preoccupied with the thoughts that they may come home and not know whether or not mommy is going to be there, that they cannot even attain the education that they are guaranteed by our Massachusetts Constitution. That is unconscionable, what is happening right now. So what do I think should happen? I think we should stop the insanity, stop breaking families apart, stop with the racism and bigotry that is happening in this country under the Trump administration as a result of his immigration policies and what these ICE actions are doing in our communities. That's what should happen.
Craig, go ahead.
So we've established that we can use anecdotal evidence to support arguments that don't really exist. No one is against immigration. We're in favor of legal immigration. There is no doubt that there are people who get up and go to work every day, but are productive members of our society. Yes, we should offer a path to citizenship for those people, but there are also people who are here committing crimes that we need to get off the streets and we need to get out of the country. That's who the ICE raids are targeting.
But do we know that for sure?
It's
yes.
not true.
Yes, we do
it's
know
not
that.
True. The evidence does not bear that out. Okay.
We can agree to disagree. I know that this is a large issue when it comes to this administration. What are some of the other issues that we should tackle while we have 10 minutes left here, that you both have are passionate about, but see a lot of discussion and argument about, that you know you want to at least,
you know,
what I saw
today was
trying
the
to hand our country over to Russia. Is anybody else concerned about that?
No,
the treason that is happening with the traitor in chief.
We mentioned that earlier about what has he done that even compares to selling uranium to Russia or having a secret server and deleting 30,000 emails.
What we're talking about is more innuendo and unproven accusations. Can stand up and say, you know what? This is bigger than party. This is bigger than being a Republican.
How exactly did he commit treason?
And I will not allow someone to hijack my party and hijack
how exactly
my country
did he commit
and
treason?
Hand it over to Vladimir Putin.
So you
how
can't answer that, can you?
I think you're both talking at each other. I kind of get that you're both. And while I have value in what you each are saying, is it, you know, we have seen things in the news in regards to what is going on. What is up with this administration, with the president's campaign being engaged with conversation with the Russian government? I mean, that'll be vetted. Do you not?
Again, I mean, how does that compare to selling uranium to Russia? What we should be looking at is what happened today, the press conference with Benjamin Netanyahu. We finally have American support for Israel. We finally have a path to peace in the Middle East by uniting Arab countries against the real enemy in the Middle East right now, which is Iran.
Iran and ISIS.
We finally have a path to peace in the Middle East, and we have
the same people who orchestrated the tragedy of 9/11. And
is
you
this
call
a female
that a
Ed
victory?
Miller?
Say that again, Kerry.
We just orchestrated an arms deal, $110 billion, with the
accurate,
same country that orchestrated the 9/11 attack.
The same
and
country?
And that is a victory to you as a Republican? You see that as a
so
victory for America?
So the Saudi Arabian government orchestrated the 9/11 attacks?
How many of the 9/11 attackers...
Can you answer that question?
Do you know?
Can you answer that question?
22, how many people? 20 out of 22.
Can you answer the question?
20 did the out of 22.
Apparently not.
So you still think it's okay to make
apparently you can't
and hugs and kisses for the Saudi Arabian government? So you think they're faultless in this?
Where's the evidence?
Every time I open my mouth, she just keeps going. So you call that a victory, and you think it's okay that Donald Trump is in? I mean, we have someone who is the national security director who is going to be pleading the fifth before Congress in talking about the conversations he had with Russian spies who were recording interviews that they had with our president in the Oval Office. And you're okay with that? That's okay with you?
You have to ask the question that this is more than one occasion, Craig, that this has been brought up.
And none of them have produced, there hasn't been enough evidence to produce anything of any substance.
How many connections do you need?
These are manufactured connections.
Draw this out.
Most of them are manufactured.
Like how many dots do we need to connect?
If they're manufactured dots, you can connect dots all over the place.
You have the guy who's the national security director who's going to be pleading the fifth. Okay, there's no manufacturing of that. He's the guy who is going to be telling you directly what he did, he can't tell you because he's
we want to impeach Donald Trump for that, but we can have an attorney general sell weapons to foreign countries
and
brush Fast and Furious under the rug, but we're concerned about this.
Saudi Arabian government for weapons.
Can I ask both of you a question? Do you not find it hard, though, no matter what party affiliation, to trust anybody who's in power? Have you felt trust, undying trust, no matter who the leader was?
I think it's healthy not to trust.
But I'm talking about if yourself being somebody who is a Republican. Every person who's come into office as a Republican, have you said to yourself, "This, you know what? I'm on board." Did you feel that same way with both Bushes? Were you confident with every move they made, but yet said to yourself, you know what, I'm just gonna, you know what,
We'll just worry about the good things they've done and omit the bad things. And same thing with you, Carrie. Would you say the same thing where you had Barack Obama, you had Bill Clinton? Would you say that you're more so, you know, are you steadfast in your support of those individuals, even if...
I was proud to be steadfast in my support for Barack Obama, absolutely. I trusted his judgment. I trusted his temperament. I trusted his morals, his ethics, his values, absolutely.
How about Bill Clinton?
As president, I cannot say the same.
How about Bill Clinton? But I'm saying strictly as somebody who votes along the party line, somebody who is, you know, the beliefs of the Democratic Party are those are the ones that you follow. Someone like you said, Barack Obama is somebody that you believe 100%. Would you say the same thing about Bill Clinton?
Yes, I would.
Okay,
that explains a lot, because while I might support certain policies of a Republican president, I argued against more policies of George W. Bush than I supported. I was not a big supporter of George W. Bush.
Are there anything? Is there anything that okay? So is there anything?
Were there
anything,
things that Bill Clinton did that I did not agree with? Absolutely.
Okay.
Did I have some problems with NAFTA? Absolutely.
Ooh.
But that doesn't mean that I necessarily think that, you know, he did not have the temperament, the judgment, the moral character to actually be the leader of the United States. I think I absolutely trusted him to be our leader. Donald Trump, I do not trust his morals, his judgment, his values at all. I don't think he knows what the hell he got into. I think he's in way over his head, and I don't think he's smart enough to get the job done. I think he's in love with himself. He's a narcissist, frankly.
If there was one thing that you could say to Craig in a positive manner to wrap up this conversation in regards to party politics, what would you say?
I am hopeful that in the coming months, which I think we are going to, as a nation, be faced with great decisions around the leadership of our country, this administration, and the path forward. I have faith that although we are in a very difficult moment, that my Republican brothers and sisters are going to rise up and do the right thing for our country and defend it, because first we are all patriots and Americans before we are Democrats and Republicans. I have faith that when it gets really bad, and it's going to get really, really bad, that you guys are going to stand up and do the right thing for this country and not just for yourselves. I have faith that that's going to happen.
Okay. Craig, anything you want to say in closing?
On the same token, I'm hopeful, but I have zero confidence that the Democrats will look at anything rationally and ignore the manufactured stories and the hit pieces that are put out there.
Would you two like to try to do this again somewhere down the road, maybe in the next 5 or 6 weeks, and see if the conversation might be going a different direction?
In a different direction where we don't talk over each other? I don't get talked over?
Maybe I'd like to have both of you in studio. Maybe it might be a different conversation.
We should do it both in studio. I'd be up for that.
Okay. All right.
I'm always up for that.
All right. Well,
I'd be in the middle.
Carrie, I want to thank you very much for being a part of this conversation. And also, Craig, both of you kind of reached out to over the weekend and said, would you guys be willing to do this? So I want to thank you both for engaging, at least in the conversation, while the dialogue wasn't necessarily,
Not exactly compelling.
Yeah, but you know what, though? It was a starting point.
Yeah.
You guys kind of agreed at the end, wouldn't you say, Mark? There was
it was close.
There was a little bit of an agreement.
It was a glint of light.
It was a glint of light. So we'll work
with
that.
Well, you know what? If we were all together, then we could hug it out. And he could see I'm a nice Portuguese girl. And, you know, in the end, we could be friends.
Which is great for in studio, but it doesn't really work for radio.
It doesn't work for radio. Yeah, it doesn't. All right. Well, listen, we've been speaking with Carrie Rodriguez-Lorenzo and Craig Pina. Kind of a red versus blue type of a thing. We want to thank both of you. We will do this again. Be sure to check out the podcast and judge for yourself. We are going to step aside, and we'll come back more Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Travel back in time to 1945 at the Buckley Performing Arts Center on the Brockton campus of Massasoit College for a night of radio and television classics live. A star-studded cast will perform scripts from classic shows like Burns and Allen, Duffy's Tavern, and The Jimmy Durante Show. Special guest star John Astin from TV's The Addams Family will take the stage along with plenty of other local celebrities. Tickets are $18 with discounts for seniors, students, and groups. Buy yours online now. Visit massasoit.edu/boxoffice.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for the final segment of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. And as I like to do from time to time, I'd like to turn to my co-host, give my co-host an opportunity to be more involved. Because I kind of felt that last segment I was more the facilitator of the conversation, even if they were talking over each other.
It was rough.
But we have a fantastic guest, and this is somebody who is going to be a part of the big events at the Buckley Performing Arts Center.
One of the premier guests for Radio Classics Live coming up on June 11th at 5 p.m., excuse me. Our next guest is the on-air reporter for Boston on WHGH-TV. She's won 33 Emmy Awards, 14 Murrows, and dozens of more honors for her groundbreaking journalism. And on top of this, a second career.
Plus,
she's a best-selling author of 9 mysteries, racking up Ryan Awards and Agatha's and McCavity Awards and just a whole host of other awards for writing 9 books over the last 10 years.
That's incredible.
I'm lucky if I get a journal entry every month.
So you haven't had the fortune of... I've actually... In another area that I do things media-wise, is our guest has also done the tours of different libraries. So I've had a chance to kind of see her in front of an audience talk about the books. It's fantastic that we have
phenomenal bio, Hank
Ryan.
Phenomenal bio. Hello.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you. I'll just let you two talk. It's great. One after the other, just not even talking over each other.
Yeah. Well, we apologize for the conversation prior. We were trying to...
No, it's exciting. You know, that's the cool part about radio. You know, I started in radio in 1970. My first job was in radio in 1970.
Really?
I loved it. It uses your imagination and uses your brain and uses sound and your voice. And, you know, it's weaving a wonderful story. So... It's never a dull moment as well.
Definitely keeps you on the edge.
What was your lure to TV? What made you cross over to the visual side of things?
It wasn't linear like that. I wanted to do something that would change the world a little bit, and I worked in politics. I hate to even say the word. Worked in politics for a little while back home in Indiana. And when no candidate I ever worked for actually won, that was sort of the time when I realized that the universe was suggesting that I find another career. You know, so there was a job opening at WIBC Radio in Indianapolis, and I went in and applied for the job. And you know, I stayed there for a while, and then I moved to Washington, D.C., and worked on Capitol Hill in the Senate Judiciary Committee for a while, and then Rolling Stone Magazine for a while. And then I went back home to Indianapolis to figure out what to do next and applied for a job at the ABC affiliate in Indianapolis as a TV reporter. And the news director, who knew I had never been on television, said, well, you're a writer at Rolling Stone Magazine, and I think I can make you into a television reporter. So it was just one of those moments when the universe lines up and everything went in the right direction. And I have to tell you, television is very difficult, and I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, the depths of my skilllessness are unplumbed. And I went home for the first 2 weeks of my television job. I went home and cried. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. And after about 2 weeks, I remember the moment I thought, you know what? I understand this. I not only do I understand it, but I love it. And so just by that chance moment, I found my calling, and I've been a television reporter since then. That was 1975.
What would you say are some of your favorite investigative reports that you've been able to uncover certain things and expose some of the wrongs to the viewers?
Oh, gosh, you know, it's such a fun question to think about. I wish that I had kept a journal of every story that I've done. You know, I think about now what a good idea that would have been. I think, you know, and I thought at the time, oh, I'll always remember everything. That was ridiculous. Anyway, we have discovered problems in the 911 system that were sending emergency responders, police, and firefighters to the wrong address thousands of times a year. And we found out why that was happening and got that fixed. We discovered incredible problems in firehouses where firefighters live and work that were making the conditions so terrible that the firehouses wouldn't even pass fire inspection. They weren't up to the fire code. And millions of dollars was appropriated to fix those up. We discovered incredible problems in the home improvement contracting and mortgage banking world, so much so that three laws were passed as a result of what we uncovered to change the system. We got people's homes out of foreclosure and millions of dollars in refunds and restitution for consumers. So, you know, it's one of those things. I still am at Channel 7. I still love my job. I'm still fascinated by trying to make the world fair, trying to stand up for the little guy. And so if you say, what's your favorite story that you've ever done? I say, it's the one that's around the next corner. You know, it's the one, it's the next phone call. It's the next email. You know, it's one of your listeners tonight who's going to call me or visit my website, hankphillipryan.com. Click on contact and just tell me the story. You know, this is where this comes from. This is what my life is, tracking down clues and following leads and doing research just like a detective.
Right.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. I'm so lucky to be able to do it.
In that vein, Hank, you, as an investigative reporter, we know that sometimes they're not always the favorite person that walks into the room. You wired yourself with the hidden cameras. You confronted the dirty politicians. What's the catalyst for that courage to brave these, you know, the seedy elements?
It's so funny. Yeah, you know, I am the last person you want to see. Sometimes people will call me and say, you should do a story about my X, Y, or Z. And I say, I don't think you want me to do a story about it. You know, unless you did something really wrong. I called someone at the State House a while ago, and his secretary answered the phone, and I said, it's Hank Phillippi Ryan from Channel 7, could you have him call me back? And he didn't call me back. And I called again, and I said, you know, he hasn't called me back. Could you have him call me back? And she says, he'll call you back, and he didn't call back. So a little while later, I called again, and I said, I'm still waiting for that phone call. And his secretary says, he says to tell you he didn't do it, and his brother didn't do it either. And you should never call here again.
Oh, my.
So, I was only looking for a bill number or something like that, something completely benign. But, you know, it's what it takes, and it's not glamorous. What it is it takes research. It takes homework. It takes confidence. You know, I never go into a situation where I am not fully versed in what is happening there and why and who's doing what. When I do a contentious interview, I have done my homework. I have my documents. I have my research. So I feel confident not only that I can ask a question and understand the answer and understand when someone's not telling the truth, And not be fooled, if you know what I mean.
So almost,
and
like,
when you're prepared, you're also prepared for surprises. When the thing happens that you're not ready for. So preparation is my catalyst. You know, homework is my catalyst.
I was going to say, it almost reminds me of that movie Rounders, where they're all sitting around the poker table, and you got all these individuals who are professionals, but yet when somebody sits down, they know their poker tell. They know when they've got a certain hand, and so it sounds to me like you've gotten over the years, you've gained your poker tell, and you've used it to your advantage.
Well, it's interesting. And that's also helped me quite a bit in writing mystery novels, is understanding how people look when they lie and people's body language, you know, how their voice changes, how their eyes change, you know, how they flicker a look at their notebook. It's, you know, it's not woo-woo. It's really just psychology. And it's really listening, you know, a good reporter. And you know this, a good reporter really listens. Sometimes when you hear someone do an interview, you can feel them just sort of waiting for the other person to be quiet so it's their turn to talk. They're not really listening to the answer. But the point is, in doing an interview and doing reporting, is that I really want to know the answer. I really want to hear what the person says. And I think that that adds a richness and a texture and an authenticity to the stories when people know that I really care about it. And I always have. My mom taught me about it. When I was little, she would, you know, I would say, why, you know, I wonder if they have Superman comics. You know, I wonder how, you know, how does that work? And my mom would say, go ask. Go and find out. Go ask for yourself. Mm-hmm. And she gave me that courage to, you know, sort of have the confidence to know that all I had to do was ask and listen to the answer, and I could do anything.
When was the moment that you decided that you wanted to write a book, that you want to sit down? I mean, I know many of people who are in this field, but yet if they were to sit down, I was joking earlier when we were talking about, you know, we're promoting the fact that you're going to be on with us in knowing that you've written 9 books. I find it mentally exhausting just trying to think of writing 1 book, never mind trying to write 9 in the span that you have been able to do it.
Well, you know, I'm a storyteller. I love telling good stories. And I've been writing television stories for more than 40 years now. Stories with a beginning, middle, and an end. Mm. They have to be entertaining. They have to be new. They have to be fast-paced. They have to be compelling and suspenseful with wonderful characters and a problem that needs to be solved. And you want the good guys to win and the bad guys to get what's coming to them. And in the end, you want to change the world a little bit, you know, and you want to get justice. And that's exactly what I do in television reporting, and that's exactly what I do in writing mystery novels. So I always wanted to be a mystery author or a detective ever since I was a little girl. I mean, I've always wanted to do that. I just never had a good idea for a fictional story. And I remember the day that I had the idea for my first book, and I just was filled with this joy of that I had a great idea. And I came home and I said to my husband, I have a great idea for a novel. I know I can do this. I'm going to write a mystery. This was 2005. Mm. And I said to my husband, I'm going to write a mystery. And my husband says, great, sweetheart. He says, do you know how to write a mystery? And I said, how hard can it be? You know, I've read a million of these. And I realized, of course, soon how hard it could be. But that turned out to be Prime Time, which was my very mm-hmm. first novel. And it was published, and it won the Agatha for Best First Mystery.
Excellent.
And that was the beginning of my second career as a crime fiction author. So, again, it was just by chance that I had this idea, secret messages and computer spam. And I thought, wow, that's a perfect plot. And every book I've written has had that little, you know, sort of catalytic moment where something happens to me in my real life, and I think, wow, that is a book. That can hold a book. It's exactly what happened in Say No More. Mm-hmm. I can remember the moment when that started. So it to write a book is a big task, but I can't wait to tell the story, and that's what compels me to do it.
And not only have you written, you've written 9 books in 10 years. Tell me a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes for you as a writer, the mechanics of your process. Does the world stop when the muse moves, or do you have a system?
You know,
are you a morning writer?
There's a great quote from the author Peter DeVries, who said, I only write when I'm inspired, and I make sure I'm inspired at 9 every morning. You know, and that's sort of how, it's interesting that my career on television has so informed my writing career in other ways. You know, when I was a general assignment reporter for years and years, and you had to come in at 9 in the morning, and you would do a story, and it would be on the air at 6 o'clock. Inevitably, irrevocably, absolutely, unquestionably. And you know, if and so I made my deadline. I couldn't go to my news director, you know, and flutter my eyelashes and say, oh, you know, the muse hasn't struck, and can I be on at 10 after 6 instead of 6, because I'm just not feeling it. And so, I would never have lasted a week. And so it's the same with writing my mysteries. You know, when I got the idea for Say No More, which came out of a hit-and-run accident that I witnessed on Monsignor O'Brien Highway in Cambridge, and I started thinking about eyewitness identification and the power of silence, and you know what, and as a reporter, my whole job centers around getting people to tell me what they saw. And when I was asked to come to court to identify a driver in a hit-and-run accident, I was terrified to do that. I was terrified to tell my story. So I thought, wow, that is the power of silence. And that is one of the, you know, that's what Say No More is about. Mm-hmm. My books are fun, fast-paced, entertaining mysteries like Harlan Coben, Lisa Scottolini, Tess Gerritsen, Linda Fairstein. But they all have that timely, contemporary element, a top-of-mind topic that people are thinking about. And they are all set in Boston and New England, so people will certainly recognize, you know, the quirky wonderfulness that only happens around where we live. But my writing is, let me just circle back to that really fast. My mm-hmm. writing, so I know that I have a deadline for my novels. You know, my new novel, Book 10, is due on June the 5th. And it's going to be sent in on June the 5th. So I know how long the book is, 100,000 words. I know how many days I have to write it, a year. I will admit to you that what I do is I divide the number of words in the book by the number of days I have left, subtract a month for revisions, and know that I have to write 540 words a day. I mean, and there is my assignment.
Very nice.
It should be so, you know, soft music and, mm-hmm. you know, darkness and the glow of my computer and, you know, the joy of imagination. No. I sit at my computer and I think, all right, you know, what happens next? Let's make this the best writing day ever. And I love it. The world falls away when I'm at my desk. You know, the secret is you just have to work all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. all the time.
Again, we're speaking with Hank Phillippe. Ryan, she is a best-selling author, award-winning investigative reporter, journalist for for WHDH. And Hank, we actually have a Massasoit Radio student. Actually, she's the student.
Radio student of the year.
Student of the year. How dare I minimize this? We have Kim Langford, and if you will indulge us, she'd like to ask you a question.
Hi, Hank. How are you?
Hey, Kim. How are you? Congratulations. That's so great.
Thank you. So my question for you is, with a defense attorney as a husband, do you get any backseat writing over morning coffee?
I am the luckiest person in the world, Kim. There is no question about it. Having in-house counsel, can you imagine, for being a mystery author, we are the best team. My husband is Jonathan Shapiro. He's a marvelous criminal defense attorney in Boston. He does criminal defense and civil rights, that kind of really good guy stuff. He is always on call for me to make sure he's my advisor, my legal advisor, to make sure what's in my books is true. You know, I'll say to him, sweetheart, I need to have somebody be in police custody for 8 hours, but I don't want them to be charged with a crime yet. How can I get that? What would be right? What would be correct? How can I make that part of the story be true, be authentic? So it's a wonderful relationship. He's the best possible person that I could be married to. And he reads my novels, too. You know, he reads them first. He's my first reader. And he is an avid mystery buff and avid thriller reader. I write thrillers, novels of suspense. And he is fearless and honest about saying, I don't understand this, or this part is boring, or, you know, yes, you know, 2 pages ago it was night and now it's day. You know, is there something you want to fix? So, or he would say, you know, that's not how a court courtroom works, or that's not what the police would say, or that's not how the district attorney would behave. So it's marvelous. That's a great question, because Jonathan and I are a very good team.
If I could ask probably one last question before we to take a moment to promote Radio Classics and your being a part of this the special event. One thing about yourself that might surprise folks.
One thing that might surprise people. I'm a really good cook. I'm a terrible singer. I am such a terrible singer that you, if I sing a song, you don't even know what it is. You won't even recognize it. I'm a terrible athlete. I mean, I was once on a softball team called the Spiders from Mars. I was the pitcher. I'm a really great softball pitcher. Now there's something. I'm a really great softball pitcher, but I can't do anything else. I can't bat and I can't catch. So my coach told me in my softball team days, my coach would say, "Okay, Hank, pitch, then duck," because someone else had to catch the ball.
And so what would your go-to, what's your comfort food, what's your go-to dish that you can whip up in a moment?
I have a dish called pasta on a deadline. It's delicious. You take any kind of pasta, throw it in the water, and when it's 2 minutes before the pasta is done, throw in chopped up broccoli rabe or regular broccoli. And meanwhile, you heat up olive oil with red pepper. So it sort of infuses the red pepper into the olive oil. Stir that in with breadcrumbs. Dump everything together. Dump out the water. Dump in the pasta. Dump in the broccoli. Dump in the oil with the red pepper flakes and breadcrumbs. Stir it all together. Put a ton of Parmesan cheese on it. And it is fabulous. Don't leave out the red pepper. It takes 15 minutes to make, and it's delicious.
Wow, I'm hungry.
I am hungry.
I know, I am too. Maybe I'll make that tonight.
Mark, if you will, being somebody who is the co-promoter of this special event.
Just want to say thank you, Hank, for joining us on June 11th at the Buckley Performing Arts Center for Radio Classics. This is a cause that's near and dear to my heart. Since I was once a student at Massasoit, and I benefited from, I was a Massasoit TV Student of the Year, benefited from scholarships. Kevin was my former student, television student of the year, benefited from Radio Classics, and Kim is now third generation here in the studio going to do the same. So we thank you for coming out and joining us for the show. Nine books over 10 years. Any inquiries from Hollywood coming down the pipe?
I was going to ask that question.
Well, you know, I guess they'll have to wait to hear me do my radio show on June the 11th. I just got my scripts for it, and it is hilarious. That is going to be quite an event. Talked about the other people who are going to be there?
Can I just ask real quick, what's the title of your skit? What are you in? Are you in Duffy's Tavern?
I'm doing My Friend Irma.
Okay, ooh, very nice.
And the Gladwins,
yep.
Something like the Gladwins with the Gladwins. John Astin.
Yep,
very nice.
So I am nervous and I am thrilled. You know, I am completely delighted with the whole thing. So yes, we've had inquiries from Hollywood in answer to your question for my book, The Wrong Girl, and for Say No More. But you know, that's not something I ever really think about. Mm-hmm. If it happens, it happens. It may be a good thing. It may be a bad thing. I don't know. I'm really, you know, I'm more interested in you reading Say No More and seeing the movie in your head. You know, the way you envision the way you envision Jane Ryland and Jake Brogan in your head, the way you envision what happens in Say No More in your head. The movie of my book is in your imagination, and that's really important to me.
Nice. I'm a spy novel fan, and I think I'm going to pick up your original first series this summer and give those a read.
Get right into it.
Yeah, work my way up to.
Well, that's fun. You know, the first books, the ones that begin with Prime Time, they're fun, they're fast-paced. If you like Castle, if you like Rizzoli and Isles, or even Nick and Nora Charles, the books that begin with Prime Time are that kind of sophisticated humor. The other books, the Say No More and the others in that series, are more big suspense thrillers, more complicated, more textured, just sort of bigger, more exciting thriller type novels, if you like Harlan Coben, as I said, or Lisa Scottolini or Tess Gerritsen, those kinds of books. They won the Mary Higgins Clark Award, so that means no graphic violence and no inappropriate language.
Sure.
They're just exciting airplane books, vacation books. I try to make them into. I want you to miss your stop on the T when you're reading Say No More.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for joining us. Probably the very last question. We got about a minute and a half left. I got a friend of mine, Maureen Boyle, who actually she used to write for the Enterprise. She's writing her own, writing a book or in the process of it. What would you give for advice to somebody who is embarking on writing their first book?
Oh, what a great question. You know, I think that and this sounds so silly, but the thing that separates the people who are successful from the people who aren't is that they just do it. You know, you can mess around and do the laundry and wish you were writing a book and try it and give up and say you're bad and say it's too hard and all those kinds of excuses that people give for just not doing it. I mean, it's the old Yoda thing. There is do or not do. There is no try.
Right.
And once you do it, you'll be successful.
Well, we thank you so much for taking a few moments out of your schedule to chat with us, to our audience, and we look forward to seeing you at the Buckley Performing Arts Center.
Well, so marvelous to talk with all of you. Thank you so much, and see you soon.
You got it. There she is, Hank Philippi Ryan, here on Monday Night Talk. That's all the show that we have for this evening. Be sure to check out the podcast. It'll be up. Just check out 95.9WATD.com for excerpts of that interview we just did with Hank, which was fantastic, and a great get by Mr. Mark Rushto. Thank you so much, sir.
Happy to help out. Love to have her on.
And even Kim had a chance to talk. She
was,
she had a chance to talk, which was fantastic. And so we thank all of our guests for this evening for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week. We're already working on next week's guest. We're going to be here, even though it's going to be Memorial Day. We will be here in studio, won't we, Mark?
For Monday Night Talk.
For Monday Night Talk, which starts at 6:15 p.m. Until then, have a great evening.